Welcome to the What Bitcoin Did podcast.
Hi there, how are you all? Welcome to the final part of ATM Week on the What Bitcoin Did podcast. How's it been? Have you found it useful? Have you enjoyed the shows? If you have any other ideas for deep dives you'd like to hear me cover, then please do get in touch. I'm always open-minded, always happy to listen to new ideas. Anyway, welcome to the What Bitcoin Did podcast, which is brought to you by Kraken. In the final part of this series, I'm joined by Hassan from Satoshi Point to learn more about the nuances of operating a Bitcoin ATM in the UK. But before that, I do have a message from my show sponsors. So firstly, today's show is brought to you by Coin ATM Radar. Buying from a machine is much more reliable and safer from meeting some random person in a random location. With Coin ATM Radar, you can find Bitcoin ATMs and other services where you can buy or sell crypto for cash. On their website, you can search by coin, address, and you can also search by geo area, so country, state, and city. You can also filter results. A lot of people complain about the fees for Bitcoin ATMs, where you can even filter by lowest fee. They also have a mobile app, which is available on the Apple and Google App Stores, and they also fully support operators. So if you operate one or even several machines, it definitely makes sense for you to submit your information about locations to Coin ATM Radar, which is free of charge and will bring additional visibility to your service. If you want to find out more, head over to coinatmradar.com, which is coinatmradar.com. Also, today's show is brought to you by LibertyX. If you want to buy Bitcoin instantly and don't want to wait days for a wire or bank transfer, you definitely need to check out LibertyX. They operate America's largest network of Bitcoin ATMs, cashiers, and kiosks with thousands of locations across 43 states. You can pay however you want, whether it's cash or debit card, and the process is super easy. I know, because I tried it out when I was out in the States and I downloaded their app. All you need to do is download the app from the App Store and create a free account. You can search for your nearest purchase location, provide your Bitcoin address, and then you can complete your payment buying anything from $1 up to $3,000 a day. The Bitcoin is delivered for you instantly before you leave the store. To find out more, head over to libertyx.com, which is LibertyX.com, or search for LibertyX in the Apple or Google App Stores. Okay, so now onto the show and the final episode in ATM Week. So far, we've done a pretty good job in covering the US market, but I really wanted to get some insight to how this works in the UK in case I decide to put a Bitcoin ATM in Bedford bus station. So for the last show, I'm joined by Hassan from Satoshi Point, who are one of the oldest Bitcoin ATM companies in the UK. We discuss how Hassan got into the space, mining before he decided to go down the ATM path, people using ATMs for scams, unclear regulation, and just a little bit of football. Okay, so I hope you enjoy this. If you've got any feedback, you know you can get in touch, whether it's about this show or the whole series. My email address is hello@whatbitcoindid.com. Also, I'm on the final leg of my holiday. I'm going to be heading back home in a few days, going to be back to the UK, back to regular programming. I've also got some trips planned throughout September and October, so I'll be letting you know where I'll be. I've got, what is it I've got coming up? I've got Russell Okung's event in LA coming up. I've got the Wyoming Hackathon. I've got Crypto Springs, a whole bunch of stuff. Looking to hopefully do some interviews in person and catch up with some of you as well. So anyway, any questions, feel free to get in touch. It's hello@whatbitcoindid.com. Good evening, Hassan. How are you doing?
Very well, thank you, Peter. Thank you for having me.
It's good, good. It's one of those rare ones where I don't have to say good morning when it's evening for me, or we're on the same time zone. We're both English.
We are indeed, yes.
And the first thing I need to ask you is, how the hell do you pronounce your surname?
Costagaza. It's quite easy if you break it down. So yeah, Costagaza. It makes it quite easy. It's probably pronounced as a little bit slightly different than that, but it's the easiest way of kind of pronouncing it and remembering it.
Right, when I first got it out, I was like, is it Costagaza? I couldn't do it. Costagaza.
Yeah, well, that's fine. Yeah, that's really good.
We got it. All right, well, listen, look, thanks for coming on. As you know, I'm doing a week of shows about the ATM industry, which I think a lot of people don't know enough about. I certainly don't. I've learned a lot about it this week. So it'd be great to talk to you about it, especially as you're UK-based, so we'll get a different perspective. Yes. But I think it's always useful just for me and the audience to get a bit of a background if people maybe don't know you. So can you give me your background and journey into the world of Bitcoin and crypto, and then let's start talking about Satoshi Point?
Yeah, for sure. So yeah, when I basically first found out about Bitcoin, I was currently working with my dad in a fish and chip business, also doing property development. I had a hobby of gaming, also like being really social. But I just heard a news report. It must have been the first ever news report that ever BBC done, or 10 o'clock news. It was about regarding Silk Road, but it was generally speaking about they're using a currency with these special kind of machines. And I was like, oh, what's that? And that's what took my interest. And basically spoke to one of my computer friends and said, oh, have you heard about this Bitcoin digital currency thing? And he didn't. And he went off and researched a little bit whilst I was also researching a little bit. And then he come back to me and I was kind of trying to get him to help me to sort out my GPUs to do some mining. From that, I also bought some Bitcoin on Intersango, which was an exchange in the UK. I think it was run by Amir Taki at the time. Closed down now, but I bought my first bit of Bitcoin there. I started mining with my GPUs, but that soon fizzled out because everyone was mining with FPGAs and also the ASX chips were on their way, slowly coming. So that's kind of where I first initiated my stuff. From there, I ordered some ASX chips. Took ages to come. I ordered from Butterfly Labs. I think it's about 120 gigahashes, which is nothing now. But it was quite a bit at the time. But super long delays. I received them in time and I mined and I did profit from it because I managed to sell the hardware at the same time as when it was going up to like $1,000, I believe, around that time, $1,200, around that time. A little bit before then, I believe. And then I ordered from CoinTerra, which is another mining company, and received those and was mining. And basically from there, obviously, I realized that the mining kind of side of things was moving so fast and the pre-orders taking so long. It wasn't going to be a viable business, I didn't think, because we had to wait so long for the chips and for the stuff. So from there, I came across the website RoboCoin, or a tweet, I wasn't sure. I just come across the RoboCoin ATM and I thought, you know what, this is a no-brainer. This is a much scalable business than the mining kind of side of things. So I made an order with them, with RoboCoin, based in San Fran, and then noticed online on Twitter that Johnny Bitcoin also bought one in London. So yeah, from there I started planning a name for it and creating Satoshi Point. I soon went to London and connected with Johnny and we partnered up together. So we had two machines at the start from one. And then, yeah, we waited for them to get delivered and we got some locations, which was really hard at the start. Like no one knew what Bitcoin was. And they're like, what do you mean? Literally walking for days around London. And then when we stroke some locations, we got some locations sorted. And that was the first starting point of Satoshi Point.
Were you the first in the UK to start with ATMs?
Well, we were, but there was another company run by a friend of mine. So they managed to get a Lamassu a couple of days before we received the RoboCoin, the two-way machine, and they put it in a place in Shoreditch. So we were the first two-way machine, but in the same week, there was the first two-way and one-way machine in London at the same time. So generally, yes, but a little bit no.
What were the initial volumes you were doing? Were you pleased with it? Was it good progress early on?
No, it wasn't. Yeah, there was we had a lot of software problems. RoboCoin were basically, they kept changing the software slightly. And yeah, we had all sorts of problems. The machines were like first generation. So there was like validator problems. The machines were getting jammed, software issues, transactions, like the software was freezing and all sorts of stuff. So it was a real, Johnny got a bit fed up with like all of the problems that we were having and didn't really see a future in it really. So he kind of pulled out. Alistair was showing interest in investing, but again, we had problems. And then obviously Johnny leaving, he wasn't so interested in investing in a one-man band. So since then, we managed to get all the machines back online because RoboCoin cut us off of the software because they wanted all of our customers to go to their website and basically give them all their KYC stuff before they could use the network. But this was too early on for this kind of structure to be in place.
Right.
So we left them and we used Lamassu firmware on the machines. But again, that was buggy and we needed some full-time developers to keep it updated and nice and clean and working. From there, General Bytes basically offered a service for us. we went with General Bytes. And then from there, we managed to get all the machines going. We got some more machines online. Alistair and Lee got a bit more excited and decided to go with it anyway. So we invested, and yeah, we've since then we've managed to scale up, and we've been growing organically since. Yeah, with loads of little road bumps in between, but you know, different pie swings and problems. But yeah, it's been a hell of a ride, and now we're trying to secure the next investment to go forward.
Okay, so what was the turning point for it to start to be more of a viable business? What were the key things that happened?
The machines' reliability, the later generation machines were better. Having the structure, the correct structure in place to be able to do banking and to operate the business in a better way, really. Just learned more how things should be done, and all the services that we were using improved.
Right.
So, yeah, from there, really, it's just moved on.
Yeah, how much trouble did you have with banking? Because I know from my side, and bear in mind, all I have is a podcast, but every time I've applied for a bank account, for a business account, I applied 6 times, and each time, put in the description, it's a Bitcoin-based podcast. I've been rejected for a bank account. I finally got a bank account with Tide. I don't know if you know Tide. They're online.
Yes, I know, yeah.
And they've got some limitations, but actually they've been great for me. And now I have a service with them, that's fine. But I had a lot of trouble getting banking services. And I know there's a problem all through crypto. And yeah, actually, quite interestingly, my interview that's coming up tomorrow is with Alan Lane from Silvergate out in the US, who have been great for cryptocurrency companies. But what was your experience in getting banking services? Did you get rejected?
Yeah, for sure. So at the start, I believe, you know, the bank didn't really understand what we were doing a little bit. I didn't hold back. I told them exactly what we were doing at the very start, and they were pretty clueless to what Bitcoin was, and they agreed to it straight away, and we kept it for some time. And then they realized what was going on. And then they go, oh, hang on a minute. No, we can't do that. And then I moved to a new bank, and again, this happened again after some time. And then I obviously done a bit of homework and spoke to a few lawyers and asked for a way of how can this be a viable business. And yeah, we spoke about it and we got updated, and yeah, it made sense. The way we've got it structured now is a lot more viable and gives us the kind of right to continue.
Right, cool. What other kind of challenges did you have early on? And also, can you talk me through the regulatory environment for the UK? Obviously, I've been learning about out in the US, the regulations they have to follow, also, you know, related to KYC, AML, but also the $3,000 a day limit. What exists in the UK? What are the regulations you have to follow? What are the limitations?
At the moment, obviously, there's normal kind of financial regulations in terms of reporting suspicious activity reports. So we go on, we have a £500 per transaction limit for anonymous customers that don't sign up on the network. We are reviewing this and most likely changing it. But at the moment...
Up or down?
Down.
Okay. Yeah. And why is that? What kind of problems are you coming into?
At the moment, the biggest issue, well, one of the biggest issues is people scamming people. So they're looking for, like, for example, a couple of days ago, an old lady had a phone call from somebody online saying that she was going to get deported if she didn't pay money today. And then the person on the phone, he's obviously hid his phone call. It's not very trackable, this telephone number that they're calling from, but they spoof it as well from the Home Office or from the tax agency or from the police or from HMRC. And what they do is they basically get them to... Basically, they'll call them a taxi and get them. They already know where their address is. They call them a taxi, get the taxi to come around and say, the taxi's going to come pick you up so you can get the cash from your bank. And then we're going to take you to the Bitcoin machine. And they're going to basically get you to put the money in the machine with the help of the taxi driver. It sounds really crazy, but each point of this, they have a good reason in how they do it. And they manage to persuade the person to do it. I know, so some people it sounds crazy, including myself, but obviously, you know, with the spoofing of the number and then knowing some of the information, it makes them worried. And obviously they're targeting people that are quite vulnerable. So this is one massive problem, and it would cause, it could be improved if all of our customers were KYC'd, obviously. But, you know, generally speaking, that was never our vision to start off with. But now we're scaling up, and obviously it has to be done. at some point, which we're preparing for at the moment.
Right, okay, interesting. Okay, but with an account, if you are verified with yourselves, what is the limit then?
So you can do a transaction of £2,000.
Okay.
And up to £10,000 in 1 month.
Right, okay. And do you have like specific regulators you have to have licenses with to do this?
So yeah, in terms of regulations, obviously we're incorporated into Singapore and the UK with two different types of companies. Yes, we will require some, but at the moment we're just preparing for everything. So yeah, we have a UK vending management company, which has nothing to do with Bitcoin. And we will also be offering services to other operators in the soon future if they have problems with cash logistics or maintenance call-outs or anything like this. We can cover that for them, obviously for a fee, and manage their network as well.
I guess the cash logistics relate to you have to have liquidity of pounds in the machine for people who want to sell.
Yes, yeah, and insured cash logistics for the guys to pick up the money and put it into your bank. And
right.
Yeah, so if they require that, we could offer that service along with, yeah, if they wanted liquidity into their exchange account as well, if they wanted that, we could offer that service as well.
How do you find the Bitcoin industry in the UK when you compare it to the US? Because for me, I find it seems to be a lot more niche, it's a lot smaller, a lot less personalities in it, whereas I go out to the US, it's just full steam ahead.
Yeah, to be honest, I haven't been to the US. Although I've met, obviously, people that have come to the UK, I've just been in London. So, obviously, I've visited some EU countries and visited places, but I haven't, yeah, my main focus has been in London. And obviously, yeah, we want to scale up and scale out of the UK as well, but we're still working on the UK at the moment. So,
are you from London?
I'm from Bristol.
Oh, yeah, I can hear it in the accent.
Yeah. Everyone can, yeah. I get told every day, actually. Where are you from? You're not from London.
Are you a Bristol Rovers fan?
No, I'm a City, but I don't follow football, to be honest. I know you're a strong Liverpool fan from your videos, but yeah.
I always want to ask now. I got told off for talking about football in the podcast recently, so I'm going to talk about it a lot more now.
Oh, really? Yeah, yeah. No, I'm not a follower. I like to watch the big games, don't get me wrong, but I'm not like studying the Premier League and stuff. I feel like it's just all very similar, you know, every year. You know, maybe somebody goes up a league, somebody goes down, but it's all very similar. I don't understand it. I think I would like to see, like, you know, I might be talking wrong here. I don't follow football that much, but like, you know, like Liverpool, they've got all these players from around the world. I think it would be nice if it was just all the same people from that area, you know, but I don't know.
Yeah, well, we used to have a rule. There used to be a rule in the European Cup where you could only field three or four foreign players. That was years ago, but they got rid of that eventually. I think it's actually a legal requirement that you can't do that now because of the EU, the free movement of people.
Oh, wow. So, yeah, of course. So
anyway, that's enough football. So you're in 40 locations now.
Yes.
What would move the needle for you? What would take you from 40 to, say, 400? What gives you massive growth?
Well, we're just finishing our business plan and financial deck. So realistically, it boils down to the next investment, I suppose. And having the team in place for us to be able to install 10 machines every month and get them installed. This is kind of what we're working towards. So, yeah, that kind of covers the area of getting to the next level and getting secure in the next few years of installations and growing the team and developing the app. So we have a new app out, Satoshi Wallet, which is an ATM finder, multi-cryptocurrency wallet. And that will be the center point for Satoshi Point moving forward. And it will complement all the other services and connect to the ATM network. So later on down the line, you'll be able to download the app and you'll be able to sign up for the Satoshi Point network, which will give you access to other services as well. So we want to do a debit card and an over-the-counter network. So you'll be able to go to a bureau to change and you'll be able to do higher volumes than the ATM and multiple fiat currencies and cryptocurrencies. So you could come to the UK and sell your Dogecoin or whatever coin and get a few £1,000 at the bureau to change. Or if you wanted euros or dollars, if you're going somewhere else, for example.
Okay, so a bit more like Liberty X then, giving you more options.
Yeah. Giving you more options, more fiat options and higher volume transactions. And all for one sign-up process. So you can use the ATM network, over-the-counter network, debit card, all in one place.
Okay. So before you can use it, you actually have to go and sign up with the Satoshi Point wallet.
Yes, but that's on the roadmap. It's not ready yet. At the moment, you can go to the machine and use any wallet you wanted, and that will be the case for some time. But obviously, at the moment, yeah, the development stages of the app, the wallet is out now, but the KYC widget inside the app is not ready yet.
No. So is KYC handled by the machine?
At the moment, yeah, it's on the ATM at the moment. Okay. But moving forward, it'll be on the app, it'll be on the ATM, and it'll be on the website.
Great. Next up, I talked to Hassan more about operating Bitcoin ATMs in the UK. But before that, I've got a message from my amazing sponsors. So just a quick shout out, firstly, to Kraken. You know who they are. They're the best exchange in the world. With spot, futures, margin trading, their OTC desk and indices, they've got all your trading needs covered. With security in their DNA, it is the only place I now buy and sell Bitcoin. If you want to join me in supporting Kraken, head over to kraken.com, which is kraken.com. Also, my other regular main sponsor, BlockFi, the future of Bitcoin and financial services. They offer crypto-backed loans. They've got crypto interest accounts, which I'm using. You can find out more at BlockFi.com, which is BlockFi.com. Next up, Dropbit, the best mobile wallet for Bitcoin. Text and tweet Bitcoin to your friends. It's just like a Venmo for Bitcoin. You got to check them out. Head over to dropbit.app, which is dropbit.app. And last but not leastly, Accounting, the best tax calculator in the market, also includes an amazing portfolio manager and it connects to all major wallets and exchanges. If you want to find out more, head over to Accounting.com, which is accounting.com. Okay, so let's move on to the machines themselves and locations. And how do you pick a location? How do you choose one? And what's the process for working with, say, the partner who owns the location? Do you license the machine to them, or do they just license you some space and you give them, say, a percentage? How does that work?
So, yeah, so at the start, obviously, it was hard to find locations. You really had to graft and go out there and see who was up for it. And as time goes on and the news comes out, the price goes up and shopkeepers or owners just must see it on TV, they kind of contact us. So they've been calling us. Obviously, we didn't want every person that contacts us. As time goes on, we've had some machines robbed and all this kind of... So we do a lot more due diligence over choosing locations. So, yeah, we kind of target locations that we require. We contact them, we email them if they haven't contacted us beforehand. And then, yeah, we just basically have a contract with them. We rent the space from them on a profit share basis, 100% profit share basis.
Okay, that's cool.
At the start, it wasn't the case. We offered a fixed amount. And then we realized we were basically going to be losing money if we carried on like that. Luckily, our first lot of locations were very reasonable with us and agreed to change the pricing structure to suit us. And they're still with us now, some of the locations from the very start. They're still with us and very happy with our service.
And the process of installing the machine, training them up, is that a difficult process? And also, how much security do you have to think about with regards to the machines? I was at a conference recently and there was another operator, I can't remember who they were, but they had a challenge with a sledgehammer to basically smash into the machine. Is this a real problem?
Security is definitely a problem or an area where it needs to be looked at more deeply. So, yeah, like at the start, you know, we were happy to somebody call us up and want an ATM. If it was located good, yeah, great, let's put it in there. And I wasn't thinking too much about the security. We were, obviously, but, like, you know, as long as it had a pair of shutters or something, we were kind of happy. But, yeah, moving forward, we like to have a camera on the position of it. And, yeah, we have a checklist which has to be approved before we would agree to a location. So yeah, it's been we've had a few locations that have basically been broken into, and Sledgehammer took one off the wall, for example. So yeah, they're all fixed to the floor. Yeah.
That's bloody annoying though when that happens.
Yes, indeed it is. I
mean,
yeah.
What's the impact when that happens? I mean, what's the loss, or are you insured against this?
So yeah, at the time it was a loss. We weren't insured. So yeah, it was that the police obviously, they couldn't do it. They didn't find any information out, unfortunately. So it's happened on a few occasions, but at the same time, they've never actually got any money from the machine when they robbed it. It's been a very, very small amount. You know, one time it was £20, the next time it was £1,000. So, yeah, it's, you know, the machines don't hold that much money. They get regularly collected. So there's never kind of a problem where, unless it's an inside job and they know it's full up, you know, it's not viable. There's many more ways these thieves could go off and do something else, you know, because there's nothing here. They have to break through shutters, through shop doors, and then through into the ATM to get a £20, £100. They're probably going to think of doing something different.
Morons.
Yes.
Okay. What are the volumes like now? And also, what are the volumes like during the bear market? Has that been a struggle for you, or does that impact you less than, say, the rest of the industry?
I believe it impacted us less because there seems to be always somebody wanting to sell or buy because the bear market is going down. Obviously, people want to be able to jump in thinking it's going to stop and go back up, I guess. So I think it's one of these industries in the crypto space that's not affected so much in the bear markets, but obviously it does, but it just changes. So one minute everyone wants to sell and you've got no selling money, and then everyone wants to buy, you know, you just need to kind of keep up to date with what's happening. When the prices surge, we do obviously have a surge as well. So, you know, so everyone wants to buy. So
what's the general profile of people who are using the machines? Because, you know, it's a little bit more effort than sitting in your front room and just using an exchange. There must be a reason someone wants to go and use a machine instead.
Well, it's purely the convenience factor. So the convenience factor is, like, if you're a newbie as well, because we get a lot of new people come to the machines, you know, they've got to sign up online and send a transfer offshore, most likely. And that takes maybe a day or two. There may be another service out there that's a little bit quicker, but generally speaking, is a bit of a drawn-out process. The idea of going to a machine and putting in cash and getting your coins instantly is appealing to a lot of people. And then once someone uses that and has that kind of instantaneous access to blockchain assets, they're like, oh, like, you know, you get slightly addicted to that. And then, you know, this is the easiest method for them to do.
So it's a great onboarding tool for new people into Bitcoin.
Yes, yes. Yeah, indeed.
I keep saying Bitcoin, but you support multiple coins, don't you?
That's right. Yeah. So we've got about 7 coins listed at the moment.
How do you choose?
Well, just having the repetition of being around for a long time. And then obviously General Bytes are supporting it obviously on their back end, so we can adapt it quite easily on our end. So there's a lot more coins that General Bytes have got there listed, but we just generally, we have our kind of due diligence for it. But at the same time, if we like the coin, we'll put it on there.
Do you see much difference between the currencies? Like, how much dominance, say, does Bitcoin have over everything else?
Yes, Bitcoin is definitely the number one buy and sell in the machines, yeah. And then probably Litecoin and Ethereum together. And then, yeah, they're the main three that's being bought and sold. Dash and Monero are below the least, I think.
And how do you provide the liquidity? Are you buying in advance? Are you using OTC desks? How do you work this? Because one of the things I always think about with the ATM companies, that if you're holding crypto to service, you're essentially holding stock, which at any point could go up in value, which is great for you. But if it drops significantly, say, yeah, for example, there was a 10% price drop and you're only, I don't know what your commission is, but say it's 5%, 7%, 8%, whatever, you're actually then in negative, right? That must be a challenge.
Yeah, sure. So we definitely come into some situations, but generally speaking, we have a hot wallet with a small amount of coins in. And that's what gets delivered to the customer instantly. And then in the back end, we have just fiat on the exchange. And then the API buys it and replaces the wallet. So we're only open to fluctuations with the hot wallet, with the small amount of Bitcoin. And the majority of the funds are spread across multiple exchanges in fiat. So we're not open to any kind of fluctuations.
And I guess you're getting better at managing that over time. You're learning how to do this.
Yeah, exactly. Obviously, the more money you got in these places, it makes it a lot more easier to control. But generally speaking, yeah, we got it there. It kind of needs a bit more, I'm working on quite a lot of the operations at the moment, and it kind of needs a little bit more time. But yeah, it's definitely needs a lot of attention to make sure it's all hedged and up to date.
What's your fee? What do you charge?
Currently, it's at 8%.
Okay.
And then selling is at 3%.
Okay. I mean, that's quite high. That's one of the things that people have said to me in prepping for this, is that, you know, the fees on the ATM operators is very high. Like, why are people doing that instead of an exchange? I kind of get it for newbies, right? New people coming in, they probably aren't aware of exchange fees, and they're probably just a bit, I don't know, it's something that they don't really consider, but it's not very competitive compared to an exchange, right? So it has to be a hell of a convenience for someone to do that instead of an exchange.
Yes, but as you know, the price moves quite a lot, so you can be kind of, you kind of maybe not see it, but the fee, to be fair, obviously it is a bit of a fee, but it's a convenience fee. And at the same time, the cash logistics and all the other parts that we basically get the cash and get it back into the exchange does cost quite a lot of money. And yeah, all those bits cost a lot of money, and it soon adds up. And we can improve it in time. We can improve it. We want to be the best price comparison in the UK or globally even. And yeah, it's...
I guess it'll come with more volume though, right? You know, if the industry grew and you had more people using the machines and buying more.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Yeah. So if we've got hundreds of machines and lots of liquidity, we can provide a better rate, yeah.
You don't have a machine in Bedford yet, do you?
In Bedford, no. No, not just yet. But we should do.
What the fuck are you doing, man? Come on. It's the center of Bitcoin. Can I not help you get one here?
Yeah, yeah, by all means, please do. Please do. If you've got like a 24-hour shop in the area, something like that would be ideal.
My worry is it would be your lowest volume and most likely to get stolen.
Oh, really? Well, you'd be surprised. We've got some in some small towns and villages. We're not just in big cities. So you'd be surprised. Some small villages do more well than a central city location.
Oh, really?
Yeah, yeah. It's just the demographics quite mixed up, you know. You know, you get all sorts of people using the machines now as well. So it's pensioners and young people and middle-aged. Your kind of stereotypical kind of guy that uses the machine. You would expect him to be like a 30-year-old kind of techie kind of guy, but it's really not the case anymore. It's just everybody, you know, anybody and everybody.
I love that. Pensioners buy Bitcoin.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Try and get my dad to do it. What are the other key challenges that you face as a business today in this market?
Key challenges that we face, just having the correct structure in place and scaling up on that structure and scaling up on the team is probably my current kind of mission, if you like, at the moment. And being investment ready and having all the documents ready for investment. So we're kind of at that phase at the moment.
Right. When I was talking to Liberty X earlier, they were talking about one of the key things for them for growth is that they've integrated with traditional ATMs, whereby you are able, as you're able to withdraw money, you're also able to withdraw that to Bitcoin. Is that something you've looked into?
Well, one of our advisors has been talking about that for some time, yeah, connecting with the current ATM providers and trying to integrate with them. So, yeah, it's been on talks. It's been talking about. But there's a few areas of that I can't see how it work, but I'm sure there'll be a viable way. But it would, there's a few areas. I like the idea. Don't get me wrong. You know, you can once you've got everything in place, you can be online in 35,000 places or something like this. So it's,
which would be great.
Yeah, it would be amazing. Yeah, yeah, it would be amazing.
How are you seeing volumes at the moment? You know, obviously we've seen the market pick up from a bottom of about $3,300. We're up to around, you know, 9,500. We're kind of bouncing between that and say 11 and 12. Are you seeing an increase in volume? Are you seeing any kind of people prepping for the halving coming up in probably June 2020?
Yeah, so I believe so. Now, like, obviously our kind of volume is increasing and is probably just about going over what the volume was when it was at $20,000. But we have extra machines now, so obviously you've got to put that into perspective. But generally speaking, yeah, I think volume's good and we want to increase. And we're adding more locations. We've got machines coming in the next couple of weeks. And we're like kind of organically growing at the moment. But yeah, we want to really pace that up in the next, well, but before the end of the year, really.
Your minimum order amount is £20, right?
It was, but it's £5 again now. Yeah.
Oh, it's £5 now. Do you have any risks or worry that if there was a massive increase in volume and on-chain fees spiked, that would make certain transactions unviable?
Sure. Yeah. So back when the transaction fee went a bit crazy before SegWit and around that time, yeah, we put the £20 minimum mint on, and there was an additional fee just to cover that. But that's kind of gone back down again now. So yeah, that's back to £5, no additional fees. So yeah, we have to keep an eye out for this. And if that is the case, yeah, we have to just increase it or take it off or whatnot. But probably won't take Bitcoin off, but we'll have to increase it to whatever is viable to do for the customer and for us, obviously.
And obviously somebody who's been in Bitcoin for a while, you know, you've been in it since what, 2013, did you say?
Well, I'd say a bit before then. Obviously, end of 2013 was when I ordered the machine, or early 2004. I'd say late 2011, I probably heard the name and then I didn't come back to it or anything, you know. I just kind of heard it and then that was that. And then I spoke to my friend and then I started mining. So, yeah, I can imagine it was around 2012.
Right, so what do you make of the industry now? Because obviously so much has happened in the kind of 6 or 7 years since then.
I know, right?
Very different place. How do you, like, take it all in? What do you think?
Well, at the start, you kind of knew everybody, but knew what businesses were in place, knew what people were doing what. But now it's so busy, you know. It's just, I can't keep up with what's happening, and there's more and more work to do within the project. So I got my head down quite a lot. I was kind of going to all the meetups all the time and was really, really social. And now there's just so much work. I'm like, oh, I just have to concentrate on this. So, like, yeah, I'm obviously watching the space at the same time, but just not in great detail as much as I would like. But, yeah, it's going in the right direction, I suppose. Yeah, it's grew so much since the start.
Yeah, and I guess you're probably having more people getting on the phone to you now, knowing you work in this industry, your friends saying, come on, Hass, what do I do? Should I be buying Bitcoin?
Oh, yeah, for sure. Yeah, back at, like, when the price was going crazy at 20,000, yeah, like, literally everyone in my Facebook was like, yeah, can we buy some? How do I do it? Is it a good time to buy now? And I was, you know, like, a couple of them I probably said no and then yes. And, you know, it was kind of obviously kept on going up. And then I fooled myself thinking, wow, it's just going to keep on going up. So, yeah, I probably lost a few coins myself, like you did, I believe.
But just a few.
Yeah, I should have hedged it back then, but there we go. That's Sod's Law. So, again, like, you got your podcast, and, yeah, I've got this ATM business. So I'm happy. I'm happy where it's all going. But, yeah, it's really time to build the team so we don't burn out and get this investment and get to the next level.
How big do you think you can grow this? And would you look to grow internationally as well?
Yes. Ideally, we're just looking at the UK at the moment, but we've got some ideas for outside of the UK as well, into Europe and Asia. So in the UK, we would like to, like, possibly go up to about 500 locations, and outside of the UK have some kind of franchise networks being in place. So we're possibly going to launch an Italian Satoshi Point network and have some kind of franchise in place. We have some people over there already that's interested in doing it, but we kind of don't want to run until we can walk kind of thing properly. So we want to have everything finely tuned here before we kind of copycat the over there.
And in terms of the industry itself, what do you think are some of the most important things that need to happen, things that need to change? Anything there where you're looking and thinking, come on, we can do a better job here?
Well, yeah, just some regulation in the ATM operating space, just so we kind of know where we stand a little bit more. And, you know, there's a lot more operators coming in now, and they just seem a bit more like they need a bit of regulation in place, you know? So,
right, so you think there's more regulation required because the competition coming in are a bit more cowboy?
Yeah, I reckon. Yeah, something like this. But not to say that we're perfect, but we want to be able to have a fair game. And, you know, just with maybe not with the new people, new operators coming, but just generally with, for example, the scams, you know, have something in position for this. We don't want to be profiting from these scam transactions, so we want to stop that immediately. And yeah, just make sure that the space is all fair, you know.
Is it a bit of a regulatory grey area now then? Because it feels like the US, it is pretty well defined, but you think in the UK is a bit of a grey area?
Not so much. Not so much a grey area. Like, Bitcoin's in a bit of a grey area, but it's not really. In respects, now is kind of coming out and people know where they stand. But I think definitely there needs to be some regulation. I'm not saying that really heavy or anything, but just general KYC, AML on the customers and yeah, just your structure setup and stuff like this.
Cool. Okay, so what's coming up for Satoshi Point? What should we keep an eye out on?
Okay, so obviously we got the wallet out, so we're going to be really pumping this really soon, Satoshi wallet. And then the Satoshi Point network, we're going to be installed in more locations. And yeah, we're just going to be getting a lot more educational stuff out there as well about how to use the ATM network and the wallet and everything surrounding that. We're also working on a few other services to complement the network, which will be released soon as well. So.
Awesome. And if people want to find out more, how do they follow Satoshi Point? How do they follow you? How do they get in touch and who do you want to hear from?
Okay, so Satoshi Point's on Twitter and on Facebook, and we've obviously got the website up. You can contact us directly through the website. You can tweet us as well. And yeah, you can get hold of me through the website as well.
All right. Well, listen, we should definitely have a beer sometime when I get into London.
Yeah, for sure. For sure. That'd be awesome.
Do it in person. But thanks for coming on, Hassan. It's great to meet you. And look, good luck with the business.
Thank you so much. Thank you, Peter. Cheers.
Okay, that is it for ATM Week. ATM Week is done. What did you think of it? As I said in my intro, if you've got any ideas for future deep dives, do feel free to get in touch. I do really enjoy doing these. Also, if you've got any feedback about this week, it would be great to hear from you. You know, Bitcoin is such a broad topic in doing this. It's very hard just to focus on learning about one thing because there's just so many different parts of the industry I want to cover. There are so many different topics I want to explore. But I did really enjoy getting into a bit of a deep dive here with the ATMs because it was something I really didn't know too much about. So I learned a lot. So I do need to say a big thanks to Coin ATM Radar and LibertyX for sponsoring this and making it happen. I also need to say a big thanks to all the guests who came on. I really do appreciate the time. And also, it was really great to hear from Hassan. I couldn't finish this series without speaking to a fellow Brit and find out what it's like operating this market in my country. And who knows, maybe I can convince Hassan to finally get a Bitcoin ATM in the Bitcoin capital of the world, Bedford. But maybe that's just a pipe dream. We'll see. Anyway, that's it for ATM Week. I really did enjoy the series. I've got another planned in the next few weeks. We're going to be doing a deep dive on all things LibraCoin with guests including Jameson Lott, Peter Todd, Jake Chavinsky. That's all coming up soon. Anyway, keep an eye out for that. Hope you're all well. Have a great weekend, and I'll speak to you soon.